Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm hosting New York Times bestselling author and host of the Genius Life podcast, Max Lugavere, to talk about his new book, Genius Foods, and how what you eat can affect your brain and your sex life and what to do to make you the healthiest and horniest lover you can be. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com. Check out the podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast. That helps us so much and helps you because you'll never miss an episode. We do 2 a week. And I love when you also subscribe to the newsletter because I give good email, and all social media is at Sex with Emily across the board. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're even cool if you ask us questions that way, if you keep them brief, because we like brief. I'm really excited for my guest today. He's awesome. And his name is Max Lugavere, but I want to say it like Lugavere.
Lugavere.
And Max, I met at a party. Was that a party? What would you say? It was like a...
I would say it was a party.
A salon?
Yeah. It was, yeah,
sort of like smart people, but like cool, hip people doing stuff.
Getting together, sharing ideas.
Right.
Things like that.
So Max was one of the featured idea sharers. And he wrote a book, and he has a new book out called Genius Foods, Become Smarter, Happier, and More Productive While Protecting Your Brain for Life. New York Times bestseller. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Emily.
And a new podcast.
Yes, The Genius Life.
The Genius Life. And he's got, Top Rated Health Podcast, and he's contributed to everybody, and now Sex with Emily, Vice, Fast Company, CNN, The Daily Beast, NBC Nightly News, The Today Show, Dr. Oz, Rachel Ray, the doctors.
But I feel like I've reached the pinnacle being here.
Well, it's kind of true. Yeah. Do you feel like you're just going to turn down all other requests from now on? Because you're like, once I did that, I'd never go back?
Probably. Okay. Probably.
I understand. Well, it's a good way to go down.
I'm just excited to get to talk about things other than avocados and blueberries.
See, but all I want to talk about is avocados and blueberries. God damn it. No, we're going to swap here because you might be thinking, I'm listening to a sex podcast. How are we going to talk about this genius diet, Genius Foods, and why is he here? Well, Max is a really smart guy, and he wrote a book that actually we all read in the office. Because we get like a lot of even sex books, and people on the show are like, oh, I read part of it, but we all devoured his book. Because it's gluten-free, so that's cool. No, we loved it because his book, I just think it's fascinating because I always talk about on the show how our brain is such a funny joke. Our brain is the largest sex organs, you know, because have you heard that? Our brain is the largest sex organ.
I buy that.
You probably all thought it was your penis or something, but no, it's your brain because that's where all the magic happens. That's where we have, you know, our thoughts can actually enhance our sex life. And, you know, once we think, thinking things, thinking about sex, keeping it top of mind. but also our brain health. So I haven't talked about this much on the show, and I think there's a lot of new information out there. How about what you eat actually can impact your mental state?
Absolutely.
How did we not know this before?
I mean, you know, 90%, the brain is this mysterious organ, right? We know more about outer space than we know about our own brains. And that's because the brain has been thought for a long time to be sort of held in isolation in the Emerald City of the skull, basically separated from what goes on down below in the rest of the body. But we now know that the brain is incredibly responsive to the inputs that we give it by way of the foods that we're eating, light exposure, exercise, sleep, things like that. And so it's this really new and rapidly evolving field of science. You know, it's advancing thanks to scanning technologies, thanks to really good research that's coming out that takes a long time to do. So, you know, we're very much at the tip of the iceberg in terms of understanding the full myriad of ways that our diets and our lifestyles affect how our brains work moment to moment, and certainly when it comes to long-term health. But we know enough that I argue we don't need to sit on our hands. We can be proactive mm-hmm. about our brain health and our brain function. And this, to me, is so critically important when you consider that today, if you make it to the age of 85, you have a 1 in 2 chance of being diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And that's terrible. And then even before that, you know, 1 in 7 younger people complain of memory problems.
Oh, yeah.
So this is just like at all ends of the age spectrum, our brains are suffering. And, you know, it's a multifactorial problem, but in Genius Foods, I really break it all down. And I talk about the food supply, how our food supply has become so mangled and industrialized, how the fact that we're more sedentary than ever before, it's led to our brains basically crying out, essentially, for movement.
They are, right.
Yeah.
Tell your story about how you got into this with your Alzheimer's. So
yeah, totally. So I mean, just, you know, if you're listening, I'm a 36-year-old guy. I'm not typically the kind of demographic that you normally see talking about Alzheimer's disease and dementia and things like this. Most people consider them to be old people's conditions. But about 7 years ago, I was in between jobs, and my mother, who was 57 at the time, started to display very strange symptoms. She began complaining of brain fog, and she, you know, was complaining about her memory not working the way that it should. And in tandem with that, there was a change to her gait. So my mom is a very fast-walking, fast-talking New Yorker. And, you know, New Yorkers, they walk everywhere, and they walk fast. And suddenly my mom's normal, healthy stride shortened essentially to that, you know, that was more sort of seemed more like a shuffle, mm-hmm. essentially. And I didn't have the vocabulary to identify what was going on with her. But I had the time to go with her to various doctor's appointments. And when we couldn't find answers in one hospital, we would go to another. And ultimately, we started venturing out even beyond New York City, going to Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland, to ultimately the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, all in search of answers. You know, why was my mom exhibiting such a severe degradation of her brain's processing speed? Why was her movement seemingly affected? I mean, was it muscular? Was it cognitive? I mean, I had no idea. And ultimately, it was at the Cleveland Clinic that my mom was diagnosed for the first time with a neurodegenerative condition. Even then, it was unclear what she had, but nonetheless, she was prescribed drugs for both Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. And I had, again, you know, mm-hmm. Alzheimer's disease, I knew very little about it. Parkinson's disease, I think all I knew about it was that Michael J. Fox had it.
Right.
But beyond that,
it's true. That was like our first.
Yeah. I was completely in the dark. And when I had these prescriptions, you know, that I was sort of carrying for my mom, and then we went to the hospital pharmacy to get them fulfilled, I started Googling, you know, the drugs and what they were really for. And that night, later on in the hotel, the more that I would Google, the more that I would read, the more my ignorance and ultimately the fear seemed to close in around me. It was the first time in my life I'd ever had a panic attack. Mm. I wasn't sure if my mom was going to die, what trajectory the disease that my mom had was going to take, whether or not the drugs were going to do anything, whether or not the drugs were going to give my mom any side effects. Mm-hmm. And so essentially what happened was I was in between jobs. I was previously a journalist. I had worked for Al Gore on Current TV, and I sort of had these media credentials that very few people have. And I became unable to think about work, really. And I decided to really just spend my time researching and reading what's called the primary literature, like the trials, the observational studies, really to try to understand what was going on with my mom and what could have influenced her risk for developing this condition. Because again, I had no prior family history right. of any kind of neurodegenerative disease. My mom was the first person in my family tree to really have anything like Alzheimer's, dementia, anything like that. So I just went down the research rabbit hole, and ultimately I kind of came back to my media calling card, and I started reaching out to scientists and researchers around the globe, ultimately visiting many of the world's top research institutions that are really studying neurodegenerative conditions, diet, lifestyle interventions, and how they might sort of interrelate. And I mean, what I learned over the course of my research, you know, has really set the stage for writing Genius Foods, and really is what it motivates me every single day to continue to inform people, because there's so much misinformation out there.
Well, that's what I think too. I mean, that's such a great story, because I mean, you got hanged. I mean, obviously it's your mom, so like you're like LinkedIn, and you're like, how can I change this, and how can I help her? Which is like such a loving, beautiful, like impassioned story. And I how is your mom doing now, by the way? Have we changed your diet? Has it been a
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say that I've, you know, reversed what she has, but I haven't. Right. Nobody's ever recovered from Alzheimer's disease. Right. You know, my mom doesn't have Alzheimer's. She has a more mysterious form of dementia that affects, that accounts for 1% of dementia cases, but no, she's not doing well. So
I get it. It's not like you could, but I guess I would just ask to kind of circle that to loop back around. But the thing that really hit me in your book, you had that when you were talking about sitting there with all the bottles of medicine the first day, and you're like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like we are all so over-medicated that doctors, at least Western doctors, are so easy to prescribe us something for, you know, everything we have, like anxiety, blood pressure, depression, just everyone's pretty much, even birth control pills I have a hard time with. And we don't know what we're putting in our bodies. And then as a result, like I hear from people like every day who are emailing the show, and or they call in and they're like, you know, I can't have an orgasm, or I can't get hard. I'm like, well, you got any medications? Yeah, but I don't think it does anything. Like, no, it probably does. We don't realize what, you know, that we're taking so many, you know, obviously many people do need medications, but there's so much that we don't need to take. And even if you're not on a medication, there's just a lot we could do to kind of combat other mental illnesses too, anxiety, depression, heart disease, just to kind of get you on the track. You can't solve it, but it's certainly going to make a huge difference. I didn't really understand all these links before, and I think a lot of people listening probably wouldn't either, and this might get them to be thinking about just other options, like changing your diets, and in a way that's not so, I mean, I guess it is kind of all the things we love, you're going to have to take it out of you're going to have to throw it away.
I mean, but not necessarily. I think it's really fun to, you know, find ways of making healthy, you know, alternatives to the foods that we find most indulgent. You know, I mean, I do this pretty regularly.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's a kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low-net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out, so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
Eating healthy does not have to taste bland. You know, I mean, one of the things I talk about in the book is the value of salt, for example. You know, salt is it's sodium. Sodium is a nutrient. Mm-hmm. We've been told that salt is sort of the other white powder, that it's something to be avoided. But actually, we need sodium for life. And one of the most important things about getting good, high-quality salt into your diet is that it makes vegetables more palatable.
Right.
So it provides
exactly. You're going to want to have the best. No, I love everything here. Like, this is all stuff that I eat, and I got a lot of great ideas for, like, my salads every day and for eggs. I'm eating eggs now. Ever since you, I wasn't eating eggs every morning. I was making smoothies, but now I'm like so into eggs.
So healthy.
Just because of you. Yeah. So thank you.
Nature's multivitamin.
It truly is. So I've learned a ton, and it's not, and the thing is that I feel like I got screwed by the food pyramid. Like, I feel like this was also like that whole, like, what was it? Like, you had all those grains before and it was just wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of things that our government has told us we should do. And so I feel like there's just so much misinformation. And the other thing that I realized was, if we don't have our mental health, we really don't have anything. I know our health, but for mental health, and so many of us have, almost everyone I know is like anxiety, you know, depression, some kind of something in the middle of that. I don't know. It's pretty much it. Everyone has anxiety. So if this could help you kind of avoid that, and you don't have to take a medication, and we all know that exercise is important too, but I feel like if you have a healthier diet and you exercise more, you're going to want sex more. You're going to feel sexier in your body. You're going to just have more stamina. It truly changes everything.
Yeah.
And I know even when I'm not in like a healthy place, I'm not working out or I'm not eating great foods, I feel worse. Like it does have an impact on it. And so I just think that these are like, and when couples play together, the couples cook together, they exercise together, they actually have, it's actually more effective.
Yeah.
So I know that you got really into this. We're going to get to an article about that in a minute. But I know that you had like the scare of your mom's, you know, illness to kind of get into it. And I'm wondering, like, because I want everyone to be healthy, right? And again, you guys, I have cookies, I have sweets, I do things. I'm not perfect, because if you run that line of being like a monk about this, you're going to fail.
Well, here's the thing.
It's just like, how do we get people to, because I think your book, like I said, I'm so into your book, and we all, the Genius Foods, and it's really, I'm amazed when things really actually stick with me. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Wow.
But I want that for everybody, because I feel like a lot of what could be, you know, stress is one of the biggest killers of our sex drives.
Yeah.
Anxiety, stress. So
stress is a huge killer of the sex drive, but also at the end of the day, I mean, I think food when it comes to sex is super important. Like, when you're healthy, you're horny, okay?
Right.
I mean, seriously, like, nature doesn't want
healthy and horny could be the title of the show. I'm just going to call it now.
There you go. Healthy and horny.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have fun with names. Yeah.
I mean, I talk about foods in the book that are actually going to improve blood flow to the brain, but those same foods are going to improve blood flow to your nether
to
regions
your penis,
as well.
Right?
Yeah.
Doesn't in your vulva, your
and
clitoris.
And analogous, you know, organs in the female anatomy as well.
It absolutely does.
Yeah,
right. So
totally.
This is, we're talking about blood flow, and so much of the problem with sex, why you're not getting turned on and aroused, is because of your restricting blood flow through your diet, through not exercising.
Yeah. And by the way, reduced blood flow, erectile dysfunction is one of the earliest signs of heart disease.
That's exactly.
Yeah. I mean, so you really want to get a handle on this. And just to, you know, leave some foods for the audience if you're listening,
you
could eat like foods like beets and arugula, which are the top sources of dietary nitrate. Seriously boosts levels of nitric oxide, which enhance vasodilation.
Yeah. Okay.
One high nitrate meal actually can improve blood flow to the brain, which is incredible. And also watermelon, and you know, the brain up top and the brain down below as well.
Have you noticed a difference since, when did you start changing your diet? Around 7 years ago or?
I've always been very health conscious, but I was health conscious in accordance with, like, I was health conscious, like, on the surface level. Like, I did what they told me to do. Like, I ate the food pyramid recommended 6 to 11 servings of grains per day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's no secret, you know, I mean, I talk about this in the book, that my energy levels were like a roller coaster all throughout the day. You know, I was starving in between meals. You know, every day I felt like I would need like a nap. And this is because, you know, when we're eating foods that are very high in refined carbohydrates, which are what typify the standard American diet, it basically sends our blood sugar, like, it's like a roller coaster, essentially. And we have periods of being hyperglycemic, periods of being hypoglycemic, and it's just a really uncomfortable state to be in. So once I cleaned up my diet and I really started building my diets around foods that were high in nitrates, like beets, dark leafy greens, you know, micronutrients like magnesium, folate, iodine, things like that, my energy level subsided, and I just, you know, I've never...
And you crave it, right? Like, because then you're like, you, why would you go back once you kind of make this...
Because it's good nutrition. I mean, you know, it's sort of like you, I guess like an evolutionary switch gets flipped where it's like your body knows what's good for you. There's this, you know, wisdom of the body honed by millions of years of evolution. I think too frequently the signal gets lost in the noise of modern life and the cravings and the poor sleep and all that stuff. But if we just are able to better tap in, you know, it's not something that a smartphone is going to be able to tell you. We literally just need to learn how to better tap into our bodies,
right?
And they'll tell us what we need.
They do tell us what we need. You're so right. Yeah. And we can still do dark chocolate, which I like.
Yes. That's a genius food.
It's genius food. You're right.
Boost blood flow,
all of that. But not a lot of fruit, right?
I'm not big on the high sugar fruits, like tropical fruits. Like, I'm not a big banana eater. I don't eat a lot
of pineapple. Talking about like no more bananas. I'm so sad, but I get it.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, these fruits are cultivated to contain more starch and sugar than ever before in human history. They're flown to our supermarkets 365 days a year from various, you know, tropical climes. And, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, fruit was available for the majority of our evolution seasonally. And also, they looked a lot different than they do today. So it's an onslaught of sugar into the system. And it really disrupts what's called homeostasis. You know, like at any given moment, your entire blood volume has about 1 teaspoon of sugar in circulation. The minute you drink a glass of orange juice or eat a banana, you're basically putting 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 teaspoons of sugar straight into that system. And your body's got to play cleanup. Like, there's you know, essentially garbage men in the system.
It's true.
Yeah, that have to like come out and get rid of that sugar, because otherwise sugar is toxic. It damages proteins that it comes into contact with. And it's just not a good... It's not a good roller coaster to be on. So I think it's more, it's a better idea to build your diet around low sugar fruits, avocado, blueberries, strawberries, bell peppers, tomatoes, things like that.
That's an easy way to start. So let's read this article here, because I think this is going to help with a few things for people going, well, what do we do? How do I change it? So there was a study that came out. Couples who eat healthy together stay together.
I like that.
I know. If you've ever tried to make changes to your diet, you know how much more difficult it is when your partner isn't on board. To find out how dating affects dieting and vice versa, they surveyed people about their diets, about which diets led to the most relationship strain and how many followed in their significant other's dieting footsteps. Overall, couples who didn't diet together were found to be less satisfied in the relationship than those who did. 95% of respondents who are conscious of their diet are also in a relationship with someone in the same boat, and 60% of those who currently diet change their eating habits to match their partners. And so it showed that they had more relationship satisfaction based on the diet type. So tell me what you think of this. Couples who ranked highest include vegetarians and those who followed a Mediterranean diet.
I like that.
Really? Perhaps the fact that both diets emphasize fruits, veggies, and unprocessed grains contribute to better overall mood between partners. Additionally, couples who weren't dieting should be happier than those who didn't share the same dieting goals, because they don't know what their ignorance is bliss for those who aren't dieting. And it's not even dieting. We're talking about, I hate the word diet. I use diet early. It's like changing your lifestyle.
Changing
like
your lifestyle.
Diet is such a negative connotation.
But it doesn't surprise me at all that couples that eat healthier.
Tell me what,
yeah. So, I mean, like, we can look at cognitive domains like executive function, which include impulse control, the ability to delay gratification, and even altruism. These are all aspects of what are called executive function. And executive function is something that is fairly mediated to a significant degree by the kinds of foods that we're eating. So I talk about this in the book. Like, executive function is so intrinsically related to our success as people in so many aspects of our life. And when we're consuming more omega-3s, like from wild salmon, fatty fish, grass-fed beef, pasture-raised or omega-3 enriched eggs, we're getting more omega-3s. On the other hand, when we consume more omega-6 containing foods and throw that balance out of whack, and, you know, omega-6s come from grain and seed oils that are the modern diet is currently saturated in.
Right.
Corn oil, canola oil, soybean oil. It basically affects our executive function in a negative way. And, you know, when you're in a relationship, you want to be altruistic. You want to be selfless and compromise and be able to delay gratification and control your impulses, right? And not be so reactive when you're in the throes of an argument, for example. And these all rely on executive function.
Yeah.
And executive function is something that science shows improves when we're able to improve our diets and embrace a healthier lifestyle, including exercise. So one study that I cite in Genius Foods is the finger study, where they took a large group, about 1,200 older adults, all of whom had at least one risk factor for developing cognitive decline. And by adhering to a healthier diet and exercising more and engaging socially, they were able to achieve an 83% improvement in their executive function.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's I'm executively challenged functions. I am. No, it's always been a thing. And I feel like when I started, and it's better now when the healthier I am and the more I'm like exercising and all that helps. But it's, I feel like I blame it on the whole 90s, like low fat thing that was like so wrong when it started. And then I got off it, like don't eat fats and no meats. And it was like grains. It was just stupid. But I can see that when I'm healthy and healthier, when I'm eating, like it's so much impulse control, decision-making, planning.
I think
for a vacation.
You got to embrace fat. And when I say fat, I don't mean all fats. I think extra virgin olive oil is the chief fat that I recommend really going to town with, using it as a sauce. You could even cook with it at low to medium heats. It's like the sexiest oil that's out there.
It is.
It's anti-inflammatory. It's really good for your blood vessels. Going back to that blood flow, you know you need that blood
flow. This is the thing. I just want people to be inspired, because if they don't know where to start with current diets today or how to make a difference, like an easy little tweak you could do, like just the recipes in here, couples can do it together. And I would say, like, if your relationship's gotten to the place where you guys are challenged or you're bored or you're just too many Netflix in a row, I think cooking together and changing your lifestyle together is a great way to enhance intimacy, to kind of track it together. It's just more fun to have a partner.
You want to be in the kind of relationship where you can eat kimchi together.
Yes.
You ever eat kimchi?
I love kimchi.
It's so garlicky. It's going to ruin your breath.
Right, exactly.
But if you're in a relationship, but it's so good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, for every organ. I mean, your sex organs, it's like, it's super
powerful. Yeah, and like everything, taste and just, you guys, this is important. I think that if people start making just little tweaks to their diet and exercise and all that, that their sex life will improve. What I wanted you here, and this has been so great, and we're going to answer some emails in a second. Like I said, I find a lot of my answers to people when they're calling about a lot of things is like I said, diet, exercise, eat healthier. And I haven't been able to really get into it specifically. I think it is a great place to start. What would be like the first step, you think, if someone, they could check out your book, go to your website, or we'd have to buy the book first. Can you share anything like a first step?
I mean, obviously I'm biased, but Genius Foods is a small investment. I mean, you can go to Amazon and get it for $16. It's going to repay you in spades. You know, I mean, it's going to improve your long-term health. But I mean, in immediate terms, it's really all about improving your quality of life today, getting your executive function working as well as it should, improving your mood, happiness, you know, more of that, less anxiety, less depression. It's really the only book that brings two worlds together under one roof: dementia prevention and what's called nutritional psychiatry. So how nutrition can actually improve your mood, the way that your brain works, you know, attention, things like this. Anything that falls under the domain of psychiatry, research is now beginning to show that nutrition has an impact. And
just beginning to show this, which is like, I always thought it was amazing that it wasn't even mentioned before. It was like, take a pill, it's separate, like you said, it's like a separate silo, but really it makes so much sense. And it's just now.
Yeah. Well, nutrition's hard to study. It's really difficult to study. It's also really hard to fund. And so, I mean, there are reasons for the fact that it's
And there's certain industries taken, who would like not to see, wouldn't exactly, like to see these studies, right?
Exactly. Like antidepressants are, you know, 1 in 10 adults is on some kind of antidepressant drug. And women, you know, 1 in 4 women between in their 40s and 50s are on antidepressant drugs.
But is that probably because it's hormones? I mean, think it's probably hormonal challenges more than going. That's the thing. Doctors are so quick to prescribe an antidepressant and they can't get off of them.
I'm not against all drugs, but you know, these antidepressant drugs become more efficacious the more severe the depression is. So somebody with like severe depression is probably, according to the latest research, benefiting from those drugs. But I mean, we all know that they're overprescribed, and people with mild to moderate depression are on them. And in some of those cases, you know, it's probable that those drugs are not going to be any more effective than placebo.
Yeah.
And in fact, the latest research suggests that physical exercise, resistance training are just as, if not more effective, and with no negative side effects.
Right, exactly. That's what I love about this too. Nutritional psychiatry.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, Max, thank you for being here. This is awesome and inspiring. So you guys, you can find Max at Max, LUGAVERE, Lugavere.
Yeah.
And it's also at Max Lugavere, Facebook, all of that, Twitter. This will all be on our show notes. Instagram. Oh, yeah. Instagram, Twitter, all those things. I love your Instagram.
Thanks so much.
Save them in my Instagrams.
Oh, that's awesome.
I save them to look at like what I could eat, what I can't. I'm really into it.
Thank you.
We're going to give a shout out to our sponsors, and we'll be right back to answer emails. We're back with Max. I'm back with Max. And Max, we're going to help the people here. I love when they email me, they ask questions.
I'm all about it.
And I think you're going to have some great insights.
Let's help the people.
I just know it. I feel it. Okay, I love answering your questions. It's why I exist on the planet. You can text Ask Emily to all one word to 797979 and fill out the short form. Or go to sexwithemily.com, click on the Ask Emily page. Always include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. All right. This is from Julie, 25, in Canada. Hi, Emily. I've been listening to your podcast for about 3 weeks now, and I'm absolutely loving it. My boyfriend and I have been together for almost 6 years. We have a four-year-old, and our sex life has completely disappeared. We have sex maybe one or two times a month, and it's killing me. I don't know what to do to relight the spark we once had. He seems to have no interest in it at all because we both gained a little weight, 20 to 30 pounds, since we've been together. I don't know what to do. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Love that Max is here because she can help. But Julie, first let me just say that I love that you emailed this question because I think a lot of people could relate to the fact that when you gain a few pounds and you're both kind of, you have a new baby, a four-year-old, not that new, but you still have a baby. It changes your life. And especially having new weight, having gained weight, it impacts everything. Like it just, your mood goes down, wanting to connect. You don't feel sexy in your body. So yeah, it's a huge impact on your relationship. So I want to jumpstart this and I want to get you guys on a track together. They're a couple. They both want to lose the weight. I think working out together, super helpful. Like it's summer, go on walks, eating healthier together. People, we just said, people who eat healthier have stronger relationships. So,
I mean, yeah, get to the gym, do some weightlifting, resistance training. I mean, it's going to boost your mood. It's going to make you look better naked. It's going to, I mean, yeah.
What's your favorite sexy recipe then couples could cook together? You have some good ones in here. What would be fun? If you were like with someone, what do you love?
I think like, I mean, it's pretty well known that I'm an omnivore. So I consider, meat to be kind of like a sexy.
Can we talk about this for a second? The fact that all this stuff we've been told about meat is that meat is, and I know there's still like bad meats. They're not grass fed.
It's a huge umbrella term, the word meat. You know, there's at one end of the spectrum really unhealthy meat, at the other end of the spectrum really healthy meat. Grass-fed, organic red meat, I think, is super, super healthy.
What if it's not grass-fed? Is it better to eat? Do you ever think of this, would you rather?
Yeah.
Like, what if you, would you rather eat, or was it better to eat, like, non-grass-fed meat than, say, like, a bowl of rice? Or a bowl of rice and and grass-fed meat, obviously, than a bowl of rice. But you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you decide?
Yeah. Is it better to eat?
Like, is it more detrimental? That's the wrong way to put it.
The only instances where I would eat grain-fed beef is if I'm like with, friends and I'm at like a really top tier steak restaurant or something like that, where I just know it's not going to be grass-fed. But generally speaking, it's better to not eat it if it's grass-fed because I think from a, that's where like ethics, I think, you know, partly come into play in the fact that you really have the power to vote with your wallet. And I don't like to support the factory farming system. Mm-hmm. I think it's a deplorable, you know, they treat animals terribly. Yeah. And I do care very much about animal welfare. I also care about my own welfare. And so when it comes to meat, I would say quality is king. You really want to go for grass-fed. It's rich in micronutrients that make you feel good, like zinc, for example, which can boost testosterone, iodine, fat-soluble antioxidants that are going to protect your blood vessels. Mm-hmm. Really important stuff. There's something really carnal to me about cooking together.
I think so, too, and it's sexy. So I think that you guys could start with – I mean, I think you should also talk to him, Julie, because I feel like – again, it's summer. You guys can start walking the 10,000 steps. I know that I have friends who like they compete on their Fitbits. Like, are we going to get to the 10,000 steps? It's like anytime you bring a new activity, a new competition, that can help. But as far as your sex life goes, when this happens to couples, and it happens, you know that you're not alone, Julie, if you've been listening to the show, that a lot of couples, weight gain or not, baby or not, they're going to go through a period in their relationship more than once where things are going to just, you're not going to feel as connected. The intimacy is going to go out the window. But when this happens, rather than attaching yourself to this image about how your sex life was when you first met, it was amazing in that honeymoon phase, that's past. Like you never get back to the first time you've done anything. But what you have now is like a solid, you know, your parents together, you've been together 6 years. I want you to work on discovering something, a new part of your intimacy and your sex life. And maybe you guys take sex off the table. You just like, you have like a week where you're like just doing all the stuff you did at the beginning, like you're making out, your massage, foreplay, you're bringing back kissing, you're playing some games together. I love sex games. Like, we have some really cool sex games. Did we write the blog about it on the website, or we have a new story we did about like the fun, like board games? Yeah, monogamy. Like, there's these fun games, and I'm telling you, couples who cook together, work out together, and play together, stay together. These are new, because what happens is when you get into a routine and you get dull and you're like, oh, really, this is still my partner. You do one thing that's different. It can be just one thing, like tonight, let's play this game. And not only are they fun games, but you learn something new, what you both want in bed. So just kind of to take the pressure off that it has to go back to some way, let's put that in the past and rediscover each other's bodies again. And I love a little massage, you know, without the goal of orgasm. Does that sound fun?
Yeah. Sounds amazing.
Okay. So we've got, this is from, thank you, Julie. Let us know how it goes. And Max too. I'll let you know. Okay. This is from Carly, 26, New York. My boyfriend and I have been dating for over 3 years. When we first started dating, the chemistry was great. We had sex frequently, multiple times a week. Fast forward now, we are 2 years out of college and things are way different. We have sex once or twice a month and neither of us are ever really in the mood. Our relationship is great otherwise. We're still very close and in love, but the sex isn't there. I'm having difficult time with this because I'm rarely in the mood. He's really in the mood. And I feel like shit when I look back on the month and realize we've only had sex once. Sounds very similar to Julie. In the sense of, yeah, this is what happens. I've discussed it with him and he says he still loves me, blames age, work, being tired, blah, blah, blah. I feel stuck. Please help. I feel so stuck and helpless in my relationship. A bust. Is it me? Thanks in advance.
Oh, man, they're so young.
Well, this is the thing.
2 years out of college. Wow.
I hear this all the time. It doesn't matter. You could be together. You could be 18. Yeah. Be together for 2 years. Every relationship goes through this period where we're all super disappointed because it's not as great as it was in the beginning, which is a biological paradigm when you construct that the honeymoon phase of a relationship is truly your hormone, serotonin, the dopamine, that newness is exciting, and then you're like, it's going to flatline.
But other things become better, right, over time as the relationship transitions from compassionate to companionate.
It can.
Love, right?
But after a while, you're like, if you just are best friends and you never have sex, you might as well be roommates because you miss the sex. So yes, there's some amazing things that come from having a long-term partner. But once we put sex on the back burner and we say we're going to get back to that, it's really hard to get back to it. So my whole thing is that you have to keep sex a priority. Hopefully at the very beginning, like the first time you have sex with someone is a time that you should start talking about it. Like, people think, oh, I should wait, or no, talk about it. Like, what turned you on? What did you like about it? You know, but since this hasn't happened here and this has happened with a lot of people, I would say that you guys probably are both really, the 20s are busy. You're working, you're establishing yourselves. I just think that it sounds like sex is just absent and it's not great for your relationship. So I'd kind of give you the same advice I gave Julie, is to just start talking about sex. So it feels like you guys aren't even really talking about it. You guys are both in the same place, which is kind of a good thing then, because you're both not in the mood. You're only having sex once a month, and he's just, and they come to accept it. People come to accept complacency, and they think this is just normal that we're not having sex, but we still love each other, and we like the same Netflix shows, and, you know, everything's great, when it's really, this is something that you have to put an effort into. And so if it's absent, like I said, you do become roommates. So I'm curious if you, I don't want you to beat yourself up here either. I love that you're noticing it and recognizing that this is something that you want to bring back into your relationship. So I would say, I would actually, the same advice I gave Julie, to kind of take it off the table and just say, how can we reconnect? Because what happens is, when we put all the pressure on ourselves, sex should be great or how it was, we forget like what it was like just to make out and to touch again and how it was at the beginning. So if you can kind of do some of the things that you liked doing at the beginning, or try something, you know, go on a vacation. Vacation sex is amazing. It's like my two favorite words, getting out of your rut, out of your same routine, and trying something new.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because like, it's different. Sex. You're not staring at the ceiling in your same place and thinking about the laundry. And I also think that just talking about it. So it sounds like he's not even willing to talk about it, but there's got to be a different way to link him into this. So I don't know if you guys, one of my favorite things is mutual masturbation. So hopefully you're still masturbating. So I think when you're in a relationship, it's time to even step up your masturbation, because a lot of people think, well, we shouldn't masturbate or it's cheating. There's people who believe this, but when you're, it actually helps you stay connected to yourself, self-love, all that stuff. But if whether you are or whether you aren't masturbating, do it together. Like, mutual masturbation is a really hot way. It's a twofer. So you get to kind of learn like what turns each other on, because you might not even know. Like, you might, if you've never seen him masturbate and he hasn't seen you, you might be like, oh, I didn't know he grabbed his balls, and I didn't know that she put two fingers inside of her. So you're learning, but it's also really hot. So just like little, you know, talking dirty, doing the bucket list where you each exchange three things that you want to try. It's like, try one of those, check one each off for a week. So it's like, it's a scheduled thing that you can do, and you're like, you're not like lost in this, like, who makes the first move? I don't want to, but you know, like Saturday night, I'm a huge fan of scheduling sex too. Like, Saturday night's our night, and we're going to try that one thing. You're going to tie me up. We're going to use a toy, and it'll be something different. So that's what I recommend to you, Carly. All is not lost. Just start talking about it and start masturbating. Bring sex back to you. The more you masturbate, the more you want to. The more you have sex, the more you want to. Take the gym.
Here,
right? This is from Scott, 37, in Texas. Hey, Emily, I've been married for 3 years and I have trouble getting out of my own head during sex. As a guy, I worry about being in the moment and not staying focused. I've always been able to get an erection and climax, but as I've gotten older, I feel I'm getting weaker. I don't want to have peaked sexually already. My wife and I are also at a point where we know the routine that works in the bedroom and don't really stray too far away from that. I've talked to my wife about this. We don't know how to mix it up, even though we're open to it. There are lots of books and interviews about how women can open up sexually. Do you have any recommendations for men sexually? I want to be able to enjoy sex with my wife and not let stress take it over. What advice do you have? Okay, Scott, that's a great question. For men sexually, it's pretty much the same advice that I would give women, and that is, since you're in a relationship, I think you guys, it's best you could do this together. Like I always say, communication is lubrication. And the more you guys start talking about the sex life that you aren't having, the better sex you're going to have.
I mean, what would you say? I love that communication is lubrication. What would you say to people that feel kind of like awkward talking about sex? Maybe they didn't grow up in a household.
Well, most people, so this is like my purpose on the planet, because most people do not feel comfortable talking about sex. And so I give a lot of tools on the show about how to even just bring it up. And that's like a huge, I feel like, yeah, because we have shame, we have trauma, we're going to be judged, our partner's not going to like us if we ask to watch porn, or we ask for this crazy thing, and what if I'm a slut? And there's so many messages in our head, we're just like, I'm not going to talk about it, I'm just going to silently suffer through really bad sex. So that is a great question, and I think that the best thing to do is just to say, outside the bedroom, so I'll give you my talk, is like not to talk about sex in the bedroom, like the worst time, because if you're in the bedroom, you're already like, you're connected, and you have this, like, you're in another state, you know, your body's like, you're connected, the hormones and the serotonin, all those feel good hormones. And then if you like roll over and you have an orgasm, you're like, oh, that was amazing. And you're like, that sucked. Let me tell you why. Then you're like linking that to the sex and it's bad. So it's like when you're relaxed, maybe it's Sunday morning having breakfast, or you're like on a hike or a road trip, when it's calm and you're in a good space and you really just like, hey babe, like I love you. I love our sex life. I love being connected to you. And it's so important. I think that we need to start talking about it. And this is hard for me too. I know we've never talked about it. I'm not sure what to do, but I know that it's so important that we continue to stay connected. And you can even tell them how awkward and uncomfortable it is. And I'd like to prioritize our relationship. And some things I've heard on Sex with Emily is that we should just start talking about it. So you could start with, let's each name the hottest time we had sex, like that we remember. Like, what was the best night ever that we've had sex? Like, oh, that time we were on the beach and we were drinking pina coladas. It's like, and the waiter almost walked into our room. You're like, oh, or like walked up by and it was hot. Oh, so maybe like a voyeur thing. You know, it just gets a little nuggets of information so you can start to get like what turned you on and what gets you going.
It's like a springboard.
It is. It is a springboard. Yeah. Like doing the bucket list, doing, you know, again, like masturbating, just really just the one. And here's the cool thing about it. Is that once you start talking about sex and you start developing this language together, it actually becomes, it becomes really exciting and hot. And it's like something you're both working on together, because you're like, hopefully you're with someone who loves you and trusts you and is open to it, and it might take a, you know, little bit to get there. But once you realize like, wow, your partner wants to turn you on, like you both want to feel great, but we get into this place where we just don't know how to get our own way. So that's how you talk about it best, and just to kind of start like ripping the Band-Aid off. And using a lot of I words and not blaming words. And another great way is the compliment sandwich, when you're like, if there's something specific, like why isn't there enough foreplay or something? You'd be like, babe, I love the sex that we've been having. I just keep thinking about how hot it was when we were making out a few weeks ago. And I think it would be so great if when you came home, instead of like, you know, rushing through sex, we were like, make out, you start kissing my neck more, because that really, really turns me on. So I'm wondering if that's, you know, and I would love to do that together, that we had more make out, right? Wow. So the other thing that I'm going to say here to Scott is that he's talking about you know, 37, he's older, but I don't think that it's that you have to live with, first of all, your sex life has not peaked. Okay. You're 37 years old. You're tired. I'm not sure about your routine. It could be diet. It could be exercise. It could be a huge reason why you're having some challenges. But one of the best ways to stay anchored during sex is to be mindful. So what do you mean by that? The easiest way I can explain it is to, if you find your mind wandering, which that is probably one of the top questions I get asked is like, I'm thinking about, I'm worrying about my size. I'm worried that I'm not hot enough. I'm worried he's going to notice I gained 5 pounds and she's thinking my dick is too small. In the moment, you're like, the best thing to do is to focus, is to breathe. First of all, breath is the most important thing. So you literally are breathing down. You're in, like, you're not those shallow breaths, but like down into your pelvic floor, down into your like deep, your organs, your down into your nether regions. Okay. But while you're breathing, you want to focus on all the senses. So it helps to light a candle. So you can think, oh God, that's that vanilla candle I love, to listen to music. So you're anchored into the sounds, or maybe it's the sound of your partner's breath. You are looking into each other's eyes. Eye contact is an amazing way to just kind of connect yourselves into the moment. And you can't, when you're really looking into your partner's eyes, and you guys don't, I know it seems weird and creepy, but even if you do it for a few minutes, it will anchor you in a different place. Touch. What does it feel like to have your partner's, you know, your partner's skin underneath your fingers, or how does it feel when they're inside you in that moment? So the second you kind of remember to loop back to everything that's happening in the room, you can't help but be present and be mindful in the moment, and your brain can't be thinking about, you know, the laundry when you anchor in that way. So that's my tip for you there, Scott. Anything else, Max?
I mean, I love your advice earlier about taking a vacation. It made me think of one of my favorite authors, Alain de Botton, who wrote a wonderful book called On Love and The Art of Travel. And he basically argues that, you know, when we are spending too much time in our domicile, like our homes, you know, around furniture that we always see, it's almost like the furniture can't change. So it sort of convinces us that we can't change.
So
whereas when you go and you travel and you visit a novel land, stay in a hotel that you've never been in before, it's all new. So it actually allows you to be a different person.
Right.
You can almost like kind of like role play, not in the like extreme sense, like you're going to wear a costume, but like,
but you could
be, yeah, but you could be a different person, and it allows you to sort of see things, I think, from a different angle. You know, one of the things that he says, and that I agree with, is that, you know, travel is great because you get to see new lands and experience new sights, but it also allows you to see new parts of yourself.
Yes.
And if you're traveling with a significant other, you also get to see new parts of them as well.
Right.
And you might get really turned on by the part of them that you see for the
exactly.
first time.
Exactly. It's so true. It snaps you back into that. When you haven't taken time off and taken time away, it really just, it's instantaneous. Even if you can go to a hotel room for the night or get a babysitter to come in and like have your parents come watch the kids. It's like, I always tell parents, especially, or any couple who's been together, if you haven't taken that time, like, I don't want to hear excuses of money, you could go camping. Like, it just changing and getting out of your own way.
Yeah.
And you'll rediscover each other and yourselves.
It untethers you from routine thoughts. And so I think that's what's a pattern that I'm hearing from all of these three people is that their, you know, routine really has gotten the best of them. So I think rather than try to force routine thoughts when you're sort of stuck in your same environment, that can be really difficult. I think change the environment and your thoughts will follow.
Such good advice. So true. You know what's interesting is that role play is actually a really easy, it's people think that it's a whole thing, like I gotta wear crazy costumes or I gotta do something else, I gotta do something and be a different person, which you can be. But last night I was at Bloomingdale's right before their closing. I had to run in and grab something quickly, and there was this lovely woman there, Lydia, and I was buying something. It was like 10 to 9. They were closing. I'm like, I need this for my trip. And she's like, what do you do? I said, I'm going to speak. I'm going to Vermont this weekend, speaking at a conference about sex. She goes, you know what you need to do? She goes, tell everybody how to spice up their sex life. They need to wear a wig. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, she had some kind of accent that I'm doing now. She's like, you have to wear a wig. I was married for 20 years. And because then you're a different person, you literally take on a different persona. My husband would come home or we'd go out. She was like, even better yet, get a hotel room. Because when they, or wear a mask or wear something over your eyes. Because when you answer the door, you are a different person. You feel different. You can act differently and they see you different as well. And they get you. She was like, please role play. I'm like, I talk about it all the time, Lydia, but I'm going to give you a shout out because you're friggin' right.
Yeah.
These are little tiny tweaks. Get out of your own way. Like, even if sex in the living room, it's different than the bedroom. But I love the idea of vacation. I love the idea of dressing up and doing just one thing different when you have sex.
Super, super important.
Thank you, Max. Everyone check out Max and all his things. It's going to be here. Max Lugavere. Thank you to everyone for listening. I love you all. And thanks to my amazing team, Ken, volunteer Sarah, producer Jamie and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.